Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Dominic Frisby, The Secret History of Gold Myth, Money, Politics, and Power is a historical and economic study of gold as a material, symbol, monetary instrument, and political force. Rather than treating gold only as a commodity or investment asset, Frisby places it within a long civilizational story that includes ancient empires, religious imagination, conquest, gold rushes, monetary systems, central banking, and modern geopolitics. The book belongs to the popular history and financial commentary genre, written for readers who want a broad, accessible account rather than a narrow technical manual. Its central purpose is to explain why gold has repeatedly returned to prominence whenever trust in rulers, currencies, or institutions weakens. Frisby is known for combining economic skepticism toward fiat money with a lively narrative style. And here he uses that approach to argue that gold remains unusually durable as both wealth and political signal. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, gold is a civilizational constant from antiquity to modern markets. A central strength of The Secret History of Gold is its treatment of gold as a recurring presence across very different societies rather than as a modern financial product. Frisby links ancient Egypt, Rome, the Incas, medieval power structures, colonial expansion, and 19th century gold rushes to show how the metal repeatedly became a focus of desire, authority, and conflict. The reasoning is not simply that people liked shiny objects. Gold had qualities that made it socially useful. It was scarce, recognizable, difficult to counterfeit, easy to divide, and resistant to decay. These features allowed it to become a store of value before modern banking or central ledgers existed. By moving across eras, the book also shows that gold often appears at turning points, such as imperial expansion, fiscal stress, or migration. Gold rushes, for example, were not only mining episodes but engines of settlement, speculation, fraud, and state formation. This historical sweep gives the book a broader frame than an investment guide. It asks why human societies keep organizing myths, institutions, and ambitions around a metal that has limited industrial necessity but immense social power. Secondly, the argument that gold imposes discipline on money and government. Frisby presents one of the book's clearest arguments through the contrast between gold-backed money and fiat currency. In his view, gold functions as a restraint because governments cannot create it by decree in the way they can expand paper or digital money. That distinction matters politically as much as economically. When money can be issued without a hard external limit, states gain more flexibility to fund spending, manage crises, and support financial systems, but citizens also face inflation, currency debasement, and the quiet transfer of purchasing power. Frisby therefore treats the history of money as a history of trust and constraint. Gold is not portrayed as perfect, but is comparatively honest because its supply is governed by geology, extraction costs, and physical scarcity rather than political convenience. This places the book within a tradition skeptical of discretionary monetary policy and central banking. The point is not only that gold can preserve value over long periods, it is that a monetary system linked to gold changes the balance between rulers and the ruled by limiting how easily governments can alter the meaning of money. Thirdly, gold as a geopolitical reserve asset in a fragmenting world order, the book connects the past of gold to contemporary geopolitical developments, especially the renewed interest in gold among central banks. Frisby argues that gold has returned to prominence because reserve currencies and financial systems are no longer viewed as neutral by all major powers. The freezing of state reserves, sanctions regimes, tensions around the dollar system, and strategic behavior by countries such as China and Russia have made gold attractive as an asset outside another government's direct liability. This is a different argument from the usual retail investor claim that gold protects against inflation. Here, gold matters because it is politically independent in a way that bonds, bank deposits, and foreign exchange reserves are not. A treasury security depends on the issuer. A bank balance depends on access to payment systems, and a fiat reserve depends on confidence in another state. Gold, by contrast, is no one else's promise. Frisby uses this point to frame money as an instrument of power. The struggle over reserves is therefore not merely technical central bank management, but part of a wider contest over sovereignty, trade, sanctions, and the future role of the US dollar. Fourthly, the symbolic force of gold rests on its unusual physical properties. Frisby gives importance to the physical nature of gold because its symbolism is inseparable from its material qualities. Gold does not corrode like base metals, can be worked into extremely fine forms, retains its appearance over time, and can survive burial, shipwreck, and political collapse. These qualities help explain why cultures associated it with divinity, permanence, kingship, beauty, and the afterlife. The book treats myth and religion not as decorative background, but as evidence of how deeply gold-shaped human imagination, a metal that appears untouched by decay, naturally lends itself to ideas of immortality and sacred authority. At the same time, those same qualities helped make gold practical as money and treasure. It could be stored, hidden, transported, melted, recast, and recognized across borders. This dual role is important. Gold is powerful because it is both symbol and instrument. It can adorn temples and crowns, but it can also pay armies, settle trade, or anchor reserves. Frisbee, therefore, avoids reducing gold to either mysticism or market price. Its cultural status and monetary usefulness reinforce each other. Lastly, gold investment is separated from the risks of gold mining speculation. Although the secret history of gold is not primarily a portfolio manual, it has clear implications for investors. Frisbee distinguishes the appeal of owning gold from the much more uncertain business of investing in gold mining companies. Physical gold and exchange traded exposure can serve as direct ways to participate in gold's monetary role, while mining shares add operational, geological, management, jurisdictional, financing, and cost risks. This distinction is important because many investors assume miners should automatically outperform the metal when prices rise, due to leverage to higher margins. Frisbee is more cautious. Mining has a long record of disappointing shareholders, partly because discoveries are rare, development is expensive, political risk is high, and capital can be diluted or misallocated. The book also places gold beside Bitcoin without treating the comparison as a simple replacement story. Frisbee is sympathetic to both as alternatives to fiat money, but their risks differ. Gold has physical permanence and ancient monetary memory, while Bitcoin has digital scarcity and portability. By including this investment dimension, the book links historical argument to practical judgment without reducing gold to a short-term trade. In conclusion, The Secret History of Gold is best suited to readers interested in the intersection of financial history, political economy, monetary skepticism, and cultural history. Investors will gain a broader framework for understanding why gold often matters most when confidence in institutions weakens. While general readers will find an accessible account of how one metal became entangled with empire, religion, migration, war, and state power, the book's practical benefit is not a simple instruction to buy gold, but a clear distinction between gold as a reserve asset, gold as personal wealth protection, and gold mining shares as high-risk speculation. Its intellectual benefit lies in making money appear less neutral and more political, compared with conventional books on gold. Frisbee stands out by combining historical range with a forceful argument about fiat currency, central banks, and the changing global order. Compared with technical investment guides, it is broader and more narrative. Compared with academic monetary histories, it is more openly polemical and easier to read. Its limitation is that the wide scope necessarily leaves some subjects less deeply developed, especially the full debate over cryptocurrency and monetary policy alternatives. Even so, its value is in synthesis. It explains why gold remains simultaneously ancient and current, symbolic and practical, beautiful and politically disruptive. If you would like to support Dominic Frisbee, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.